This is Rational Radio. This is Steele and Unger.
Hey, it's Rick Unger from Steele and Unger, and this is Rational Radio Daily. In case you missed it, career counterintelligence officer Malcolm Nance shared his insights on the optics of the diplomatic dialogue between North and South Korea. Guest co-host Boyd Matheson and I also discussed President Trump's call for a return to using earmarks in Congress. Great discussion, so tune out the noise and tune into Rational Radio. Somebody else who was probably trying to compose himself over this news right now. And that is, of course, Malcolm Nance, who is going to join us to talk about this new love affair between North Korea and South Korea. As you all know, Malcolm is a former naval intelligence, counterterrorism, and intelligence officer specializing in the Middle East. He's a combat veteran, a historian, an author. He spent 35 years in the field. He won't tell us what the heck he was doing, but it was combat intelligence activity. Malcolm, we know that you're having a tough time keeping it together tonight in your grief over Steve Bannon's day.
No, I'm reveling in the shot for deliciousness of it all.
The most honest answer we will have in the entire program tonight. That's a wrap.
I was being sarcastic.
Made his own bed.
That's the problem with you intelligence guys. You don't get sarcasm, you know?
Just
so
facts,
Malcolm, nice to have you back as always, Malcolm. What is going on over there on the Korean Peninsula? All of a sudden, I mean, it's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. 3 weeks ago, North Korea was ready to blow up Seoul. Today, it's, oh, my brothers. Somebody actually referred to the South Koreans from the North Korean negotiating team as my brethren. Thought that was a nice touch. What's going on here?
What you are seeing is a brilliant game of regional power playing by a master, people who have taken master classes in manipulating not only the South Koreans and other people in the region, but we are also seeing the world-class trolling of Donald Trump by North Korea. Now, despite the fact that President Trump believes he is responsible for getting South and North Korea together, which is true in a way. He is responsible for that. But North Korea has been playing this game for over 60 years. It is their job to use whatever levers of propaganda, political power, rapprochement, détente, whatever, to gain advantage, whether it's for that short period of time, as we're seeing with the threats and that they were going to do nuclear tests and responding to the United States. So what they decided to do was to respond to the United States in a way that would confuse the president and his national security staff. They ratcheted back the rhetoric. They opened their arms and made Donald Trump appear to be the bad guy within the region of within the Korean Peninsula. So this, all of this loving, this love fest, everybody wanting to go to the Olympics, is a great game being played by Kim Jong-il.
So let me ask you this. If Donald Trump hadn't kind of spooked the South Korean leadership, I think that he's made them just as nervous, if he's made North Korea nervous at all. Certainly, you know, I think South Korea is just as nervous. Does any of this happen without the behavior of the president over the past 6 months to a year?
No, this is the sort of activity North Korea is just very, very well known for. You know, going from saber rattling to allowing, you know, people who have lost loved ones or who have separated from loved ones to come back a few months later. They had a joint development zone between North and South Korea. North Korea shuts it down. Then after the South Koreans balk and it gains to a certain level of notoriety, North Korea will open that up. They know how to operate within their own region. Donald Trump is just the latest in a series of players of this game since Harry Truman had to deal with the North Koreans. The only problem is he thinks his bluster is responsible for everything that's going on. But in fact, he is the one who is being manipulated by North Korea pretty well, because Trump cannot do a thing other than claim that he has solved the North Korean and South Korean problem by having them get together for these Olympic talks and sending these Olympic delegations. North Korean will now go through, and then they will do something provocative right as soon as the Olympic Games end.
Boyd, what do you got?
Hey, Malcolm, this is Boyd. Do you think that Lindsey Graham becomes part of that trolling effort with his, you know, immediate reaction, knee-jerk reaction of we need to pull the U.S. out of the games if North Korea is coming? How do you see that playing out? I think it's a big swing and a miss by Senator Graham, but how do you see that? And again, is he just being trolled like the president?
Well, you know, who knows what's going on with Senator Graham these days? You know, one of the president's biggest detractors, now embracing the president on many different fronts. You know, he can speak that rhetoric, and that rhetoric works great in South Carolina. Where it doesn't work great is putting the United States in another position in which we isolate ourselves from the world. You know, this isn't 1980. This isn't, you know, us pulling out of the Olympics as for some strategic geopolitical purpose. All that would do is show that China is the biggest player in Asia. Mm-hmm. North Korea now has the ability to make the United States humiliate itself. And, of course, it would give them the ability to claim that Kim Jong-un is the winner. Person who is the winner and is more responsible as a leader. Yeah. Than Donald Trump.
Yeah, and Malcolm, true. Don't you think it's interesting that both President Trump and in a similar way, President Carter with the, you mentioned the 80 boycotts, and it's interesting that both political parties, I think, have been duped by folks in the kind of the communist regime territory to really make a major swing and a miss in terms of participation in the Olympics and what that really means and what it really does in terms of who's really in charge, who really is the superpower.
Well, you're right. However, you know, I thought Carter's position was for pulling the United States out for, of all things, the Russian invasion, the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan.
Ironic, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, my
Here
God.
We are. Irony
is you know, I completely forgot that's why we did it. That's right. Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, the even more ironic is that I have six Afghan war rugs in this room that I'm in right now.
Do you have a gold medal, though, Malcolm? You got to have a gold medal to go with it or it doesn't count.
No, I've got some old Soviet era ones here too. But more importantly is that Jimmy Carter did it for a core reason that the United States exists, that the United States furthers democracy around the world and would not stand for a totalitarian regime willy-nilly invading countries. Kim Jong-un is going to win this game because he is the person who is ratcheting down the tensions on the peninsula, showing fake rapprochement with South Korea, if only for the period of this games, and showing that anything the United States does from this point is the United States will appear to be the hegemonist, will appear to be the nation that is rattling the saber right up to the point of nuclear war. So, you know, again, Donald Trump thinks that he's playing a great game with these tweets. He, you know, Kim Jong-un and the North Korean regime has been using communiques and humiliation via communique since 1954. And they're just really good at this game.
So if you're just joining, we're talking with Malcolm Nance. You know him. You love him. MSNBC contributor, former naval intelligence, counterterrorism and intelligence officer. Malcolm, you know, it does seem, you know, what a big shock here, that the president and Lindsey Graham are kind of at odds on this thing. The president has put out some tweets, as you pointed out, not only taking credit for this all happening, but saying that he's 100% behind the idea of the North Koreans participating in the games in February, while Lindsey Graham, as you guys just talked about, says we should boycott. I thought they're like, they're golf buddies now, aren't they on the same team?
Again, you know, the president is an immediately transactional person. And we learned that from the new book, Fire and Fury, which I'm sure you've been talking about all the time. You know, there's nothing surprising now that we could really learn about Donald Trump that we didn't know. But one thing we do know is he lives for the immediate moment. He does not think beyond what's happening in front of him. So if he can get out the tweets that he has brought peace to the Korean Peninsula and then will someday disarm North Korea, that's good enough for him. The entire geopolitical sphere outside of his, you know, his phone that he's using works on a completely different scale and with different parameters and metrics, which we used to call diplomacy. But the United States doesn't really engage in that very much anymore. We have essentially a gutted State Department. You know, next time North Korea does something provocative with their nuclear weapons program, whether as a celebration of the Olympics, they detonate another bomb, you will see this go right back to where it was.
Well, that was going to be the jackpot question, you know, before we let you go.
Sure.
There's no reason to think that this is anything other than the same kind of North Korean behavior we've seen, as you point out, for 60 years now. The Olympics will happen. That'd be great if North Korea participates. And then it'll, I assume, just go back to normal, yes?
Sure, absolutely. You know, and I look forward to seeing the North Korea, you know, biathlon team, because I'm pretty sure they know how to shoot. But apart from that, you know, bobsledding, you know, as a team, they're not very good at.
Hey, come on, Jamaica's outfield of the team. Skating. Why can't they? Yeah.
Yeah, I think we should. We should put China, Russia, North Korea, South Korea, and the U.S. all in a short track speed skating, winner take all, and we'd be done.
That's true. We'd probably win.
Awesome.
There'd be a lot of dead on the ice, but what do we care, right? All right, Malcolm Nance, you know him. Former Naval Intelligence Counterterrorism Officer, Middle East Specialist, our favorite secret agent man. As always, Malcolm, we so love having you on the program, and we will do it again soon. We got a lot more Rational Radio Daily for you right after this. So whatever your New Year's resolution, reality is you're going to go to bed about 365 times this year. You deserve to have your best night's sowevery one of those nights. Boll & Branch, makers of the world's most comfortable sheets, makes luxury bedding affordable to you. They cut out the middlemen and sell directly to you at BollAndBranch.com. The result is that their sheets cost less than half of designer brands, but they give you twice the quality. Now, there's a reason why Boll & Branch sheets have so many five-star reviews. Hundreds of thousands of Americans, and that includes three U.S. presidents, mind you, are sleeping better than ever on Boll & Branch. If you haven't slept on pure organic cotton sheets before, let me tell you, you don't know what you're missing, because you won't believe how soft they are. I guarantee you will love Boll & Branch sheets. And to prove it, the company will let you sleep on those sheets risk-free for an entire month. And right now, they're offering $50 off your first set of sheets, plus free shipping when you use the promo code STEEL. That's $50 off, plus free shipping at BollAndBranch.com, promo code STEEL, BollAndBranch.com, spelled B-O-L-L, and Branch.com, promo code STEEL. Get over there and find out what cotton sheets should really feel like.
And I hear so much about earmarks, the old earmark system, how there was a great friendliness when you had earmarks. But of course, they had other problems with earmarks. But maybe all of you should start thinking about going back to a form of earmarks, because this system, no, well, you should do it. And I'm there with you, because this system really lends itself to not getting along. It lends itself to hostility and anger, and they hate the Republicans and they hate the Democrats. And, you know, in the old days of earmarks, you can say what you want about certain presidents and others, where they all talk about they went out to dinner at night and they all got along and they passed bills. That was an earmark system. And maybe we should think about it, and we have to put better controls because it got a little bit out of hand, but maybe that brings people together. Because our system right now, the way it's set up, will never bring people together.
Okay. The president today discussing the return of earmarks in his meeting with the leaders of Congress. So let me ask y'all a question. What if I told you that for $15 billion a year, $15 billion, this is out of the United States Treasury, our budget, you have to admit, as those expenditures go, that is not a lot of money. For $15 billion a year, we could likely get rid of fiscal cliffs. We could stop discussions about government shutdowns. We could get major legislation to go through. We could actually have Congress doing something. What if I told you that were possible? Well, that's exactly where we were when we did away with earmarks. This all happened, it was back in, 2011. That was when the House banned earmarks, thanks to a corruption of the earmark system. It did get carried away. It was probably the infamous Bridge to Nowhere that did the system in. But the reality is, earmarks for many, many, many years served as the grease that made Congress work. You see, when a member of Congress can take home a project to their home district that's going to create jobs and deliver something good to the community, you know what? There's two things that happen. Number one, they suddenly need less money from special interests to run for office because they have pleased their home district by delivering that park or whatever it might be, or that plant that's going to employ people. And the other is they can trade in Congress. If they want to build that plant back in their home district, if everybody else in Congress will agree to get behind that and vote for it, well, you know what they're going to do? They're going to give somebody their vote on something else, often something really important. So, Boyd, believe it or not, I am with the president when he suggests it's time to bring back earmarks.
Rick, we were having such a good night. We were having such a good night.
And we're switching positions because the conservatives, actually the Republicans are the ones talking about it, doing it in Congress. You're supposed to be for it. I'm supposed to be against it. But looks like we're switching.
We're going to flip roles on this one. 94% of incumbents win re-election anyway. They do not need any more help staying around. And, you know, I always say people always complain, as the president did, about the conflict in Washington. But here's the deal. You cannot get $20 trillion in debt through conflict. How do you get there? Collusion. What is the grease for collusion? Earmarks. And you can ask my wife on this. If I go home and I say,
all right,
honey,
put your wife on the microphone right now.
I'm going to ask her. She'll back me on this. If I go home and I say, honey, we really need a bigger big screen TV. It's going to put a little bit of a hole in the budget, but I'm pretty sure we can make it work out. If we have conflict over that, we are not buying the TV and we are staying on budget. If I come in and I bring an earmark with me and I say, honey, I know you have been dying to get that new couch. And if we just package the couch and the big screen TV together, it'll put a bigger hole in the budget, but I'm still confident that we can work our way out. Then we collude and we spend the money, and that's how you end up $20 trillion in debt. And that's the problem with earmarks.
But I'm going to disagree. Because the amount that
I'm just warming up, just so you know.
The amount that we spent on earmarks. Well, here, look at it this way. If there were earmarks, the last government shutdown, in all likelihood, would not have happened. They would have been able to grease the skids enough to get the bills through. It wouldn't have happened. And we lose way more than that on every week that goes by during a government shutdown. So for that $14 or $15 billion a year, we could be saving in government shutdowns alone in all of the aggravation.
The government shutdowns are a myth. Those are manufactured by both of the political parties for their own political purposes. There's no reason to do that if we do it the right way. Here's how I describe the bill making process, particularly when you have earmarks. So, Rick, now you're driving home tonight and your wife calls and says, honey, I need you to get bread, milk, and eggs on the way home. That's all we need. Just buy that. You go into the store, you pick up your bread, milk, and eggs, you go to the cash register, and the lady at the cash register rings you up, and she said, well, I'm sorry, sir, you can't buy just bread, milk, and eggs in this store. To get your bread, milk, and eggs, you also have to buy a bucket of nails, a half ton of iron ore, a book on cowboy poetry, and a Barry Manilow album. And you say, yeah, but I don't want any of those things. You say, well, you can't buy bread, milk, and eggs unless you buy all of those things. In fact, you can't have your bread, milk, and eggs unless you buy one of everything in this store. And that's what happens with
earmarks. But see,
earmarks.
I don't agree with that. I really don't. I mean, I'll tell you what. I can see bringing them back with some limitations on them. But I got to tell you, I look at what's happened since they went away. And I look at Congress's absolute inability to do anything. And I don't think I'm going to be convinced that for $15 billion a year, which, by the way, isn't in, well, as long as it's not ultimate
billions,
it's not going into anybody's pocket. It's going into things that are benefiting the communities back home, which I think has some value. And by the way, you can make the argument that the executive department, you know, who tends to propose budgets, they have no idea what's going on locally. They have no idea about how Erie, Pennsylvania might be the perfect place to build a certain kind of a plant. They don't know. And it is a good thing for Congress to be in touch with that, because that's where the members come from. They come from Erie, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
He's
okay. I think I'm with you.
So you've got that.
First, we have to get to what is the limit? What is the limit of an earmark? But how about this? I'm going to be a compromiser today.
Okay.
Just so you know.
That's what we do here. We come up with solutions.
So here we go. Solution centric. So what if you have the earmark, but the requirement is complete transparency? So nothing tucked into a bill in the 12 o'clock hour. I mean, we saw this on the talk about fiscal cliff bill. Yeah. You know, in the fiscal cliff bill, there was $5 million for Jamaican rum. There was $3 million to fix the potholes in the Talladega Speedway. So I'm okay. If you want to do that, that's fine. And maybe that's good for the folks in Florida or the people in Jamaica. So just transparency and accountability. So you can do all the earmarks you want, but we just have to, none of them can go through on something that's done by unanimous consent.
I'll go you one better. I think you're on the right track. I'll go you one better. How about Texas Congressman Culberson's, Republican no less, who proposed that the way to deal with the corruption that we did see in the past is you've got to put it in at the beginning of a bill. It can be requested by a local official in advance. It can go through committee, but it's part of the initial bill. That way you're not throwing stuff around at the last minute try to make the thing. Then they can talk to each other at the top of the bill and say, look, we're going to put this in the bill. They can still do the horse trade.
That's right.
But it is more upfront and it is more transparent.
That's right. Because as long as you have transparency and accountability, I think that's fine. And I think the other thing, I know you're looking to grease the skids on this, but we've got to be careful that they at least have to relate to the bill in some way, shape, or form, or do it as a side-by-side bill. In other words, say, okay, we'll put all the earmarks in this side-by-side thing, because we have bills that are so complex and have so many unrelated things. I mean, the fact that we're dealing with DACA in a spending bill is ridiculous.
It's pretty crazy.
It's really crazy. And you wouldn't need nearly as many earmarks if you were dealing with things one subject at a time. Congresswoman Love has a nice bill on that in terms of, let's focus them a little sharper. Let's get them so they really are germane to the bill rather than, and as you said, I'm okay. If we can get transparency, can't dump it in the dead of night at the last minute, and people find out about it after the bill is passed, then we can have a very different conversation about it.
I think it's really worth pursuing. I really do. I wrote a piece back in 2012, believe it or not. We'll put it up on the website for Forbes magazine, where I made the argument. I said, you know, every instinct that we have as Americans is that this is a terrible practice. It's corrupt. They ought to be able to do this without it. But the reality is they can't. They don't. And at some point, we can either go down in flames in our, you know, desire to be whatever the word is, not be affected by corruption, if that's how you see it, or we can actually look for a system where we can make it easier for Congress to legislate. And you look at what holds Congress up. It's so simple now. It's look, especially in the House, you know, every 2 years, these guys and women have to run for office again. And all they care about is their positioning in Congress based on what the folks back home are going to react to. The result is nothing gets done. They don't lead. They follow. They follow the voters so they can keep, as Mel Brooks would put it, their phony baloney jobs. So if you bring this back into the process, you are actually, you're doing something. Even if I'm a Congress member from a really far right district, I'm a Freedom Caucus member. I'll tell you what, maybe I can vote for DACA if I bring a factory back home and I produce some employment. Maybe I'll be forgiven for doing what I actually thought was right.
Okay, I'm going to pause you right there because we got to be careful because we're hearing this more and more, and I'm hearing it more from people like Mitch McConnell,
right,
who say this is really complicated. The president needs to expect less. The American people need to expect less. We need to expect more, and we've got to be careful that we don't sell out for some plant that maybe should or shouldn't be built again, because then we're starting to get back into the picking winners and losers things we were talking about.
That.
So again, we got to be careful. The transparency thing, I buy that, and I think that's a different conversation. But we've got to be careful that we start settling. The moment we start to sell, the most dangerous day in the life of an organization, when I used to do business consulting, was when people just started to accept the status quo. That is the most dangerous day. And we're trying to do something in this country that's never been done. I mean, we're trying to outlive our own success. Nobody's done it in history. But when you go back and look at those societies, most of them just started to settle and say, yeah, that's just kind of the way it is. Or, oh, this is how we have to do this. And they get wiped out by someone who's hungry, who's really going on principle, then to policy, you know, and then moving it forward from there. And so it is one of those slippery slope things. I think there's a space for a compromise and a space for what you're talking about, Rick. But I do think we've got to be careful, because you go from zero to 20 trillion in debt. I mean, think what happens if the interest rate, right now we're paying about 200 billion a year on interest on the debt, basically with an interest rate of zero. If interest rates go up to historic averages, not a big spike, not a big jump,
trouble. Right.
A trillion a year in interest payment, and
no,
tax increase, no cut can solve that problem. And so,
but honestly, it's not going to be. I mean, look, I am actually with you on the problems of the debt, but it wasn't earmarks that caused our debt. It just wasn't. It just wasn't.
Yeah. It definitely was not the source. There's a host of sources there, but it's,
I mean,
it's,
you know,
part of the process.
14, 15 billion a year. I mean, that really is, in the context, it's like you going to Sizzler. You know what I mean? It's not a lot of money.
But we have to look at community.
Good.
Our politicians have never led in this country, ever. Going all the way back to the beginning, Declaration
That's
of Independence
true.
Was a lagging document, not a leading. A great document for sure,
right?
But not a leading
lagging,
document.
Not a leading. Yeah.
Jackie Robinson breaks the color barrier in 1947. It's 15 years later, Congress gets around to doing something. It's community that leads. And so go back and look. If you look at the communities and you look at the cities and you look at the states, they're doing it. They're proven you can function within a budget. You can provide the services that your citizens want and need. It's a doable thing. But we've created it and made it so complicated and so complex that it makes it hard for anyone to understand, which makes it easier for the bad players on both sides of the aisle
to manipulate the system. I got to point out that a lot of those states you're talking about, you're right, but they have earmarks.
Not Utah.
Well,
not
Utah.
Y'all ought to come out to Utah. I know you have some good family connection here. Come to Utah, Rick. We'll show you around. We'll show you what a balanced budget looks like. We'll show you what community solutions.
Right.
I'm teasing you.
All of those Democrats in Salt Lake City are my buds, you know?
That's right. They're great. We love them.
It's amazing. People don't realize that Utah is perceived as such a Republican state that they don't realize that Salt Lake City, the biggest city, is completely Democrat.
That's right. That's right.
I was surprised. I can tell you that. All right. Well, you and I will continue this conversation. I think it's an interesting one.
I do get
the points you're making. Maybe I've just become a little too cynical. I don't think we are ever going to be able to move our Congress into that space that you're talking about. I would like that. I really would. I just you know, I mean, history tells me and what I see currently, it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And they can't manage to get anything done. I look back to that time before 2011 and they weren't great then. I'm not going to suggest, boy, everything was bliss, but they could at least make deals with each other. Now they won't even have lunch together. You know?
And I think deals can be had. I think that can be done. And I do think there is a way to split the difference and get a system that works that is transparent. And as long as we're getting to that, then it's a very different conversation. But we got to expect more, not less.
Okay, that's fair. All right, we'll leave it at that. Hey, I want to thank you all for listening. This is Rick Unger of Steel and Unger on Sirius XM's POTUS Channel 124. You can catch us every evening, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, and you can listen to our Steel and Unger Rational Radio Daily Podcast for highlights of the day. You can get it over at steelandunger.com, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you like to get your podcasts.